thing. But yeah, you know what? It's something that I've learned that life happens, and you can't be overly upset by that. And like I say, most people are very forgiving of these types of things. You know, no one's expecting professionalism, which is a good thing, because you know, Brain Food is by no means Brain Food is a 100% amateur production, as I'm sure all our viewers are aware. Anyway, we're live, everybody. Welcome to Brain Food Live on Air. It's episode 120. I'm bringing it to you every Friday, and I'm super excited today because Adam Gordon has been upgraded once again, and I'm very pleased to bring on a good friend of mine to help me co-host this show, Christina Robinson. So, Christina, how are you doing? Good to see you.
I'm good. Good to see you. I can't believe it's episode 120. I hadn't realised just how many had clocked up. I remember like sitting watching the first one, and like we didn't know each other back then.
Did we meet on Brain Food Live? I think we might have.
That's
been.
How we've met. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. We've made friends. At least this show has been worthwhile. We've made some friends. But I think, you know what? Because you do it every week, I forget as well. Like sometimes I'm shocked to think, crikey, 120, that must be 2 years worth of material. Probably more, because we don't do it like exactly every week. It's probably 3 years worth, really. It's good fun. It hasn't stopped being fun, so we'll keep doing it. Anyway, let's do some quick sound checks, as we always do, folks. So if you can hear me all on Crowdcast, there's 50-odd of you live here. So if you can hear me, please say hello there. Let me know on the chat stream. That'd be good. We are multicasting across three channels today. We've brought back Periscope, would you believe? Periscope meant to have died, but it's still there. It's literally still there, and you can fire it off. So if you can hear my Periscope, give me a retweet, do something like that. That'd be awesome. And we're on live on LinkedIn as well. So if we're there. Let me just check if I'm there. I can't tell on that. But if you can hear me on LinkedIn, please let me know. Give me like a supportive emoji. There's an emoji that allows you to be supportive. So can you please click on that? That'd be good to know. And on Facebook, I think there's enough people there that can say that you can hear me okay. I think so. A couple of people like it. All right, cool. We're ready to roll. A quick word to from our sponsors today. Just want a quick shout out to this really interesting new product coming out of the US called Guide. I don't know whether I think these guys are going to come into the UK in a big way. There's a few European businesses have used this and they rave about it. And it's basically a candidate engagement software. It's literally designed purely for that, to make sure you have a personalized experience for each candidate. That's the bar that they're going at. It's not about having automated responses or whatever. It's like creating an experience where the candidate genuinely feels that they're getting individual treatment. So check out guide.co. They actually had a big transaction. Gem Software, who I think some of you might know, ATS provider, new ATS provider really out of the States, they acquired resources which have now become Guide. So expect a lot of investment and know-how going into this company. So guide.co, check them out. Okay, let's get on with the show. Christina, for the few people who don't know you, actually, can you maybe quickly introduce yourself, who you are, what it is you do?
Yeah, so I run a marketing agency specializing in social media for recruiters here in the UK. So that's Green Umbrella Marketing. And essentially, I just spend all day, every day looking at different social media strategies to help build talent pools, whether that's from an agency perspective or an in-house perspective.
Fantastic. And Green Umbrella have done some work for Brain Food as well. So I can absolutely confirm they're a fantastic crew that really delivers some top class service. So if you need any support on your kind of conversational marketing, I would say, then definitely get in touch with Green Umbrella. Christina, we always start off with a review of the newsletter. Did you read the newsletter last week? And if so, what was interesting for you?
So I did. I have to hold my hand up and say I read it every week, but I'm one of those people that I like the how-tos, the more kind of like practical stuff. So standout thing for me this week was that list of recruitment tools, like all the software tools. It's like over 130 things on there, and just like flicking through, like loads of things I was aware of, but some really like interesting stuff that was new to me.
Yeah, it's actually really hard. I hate lists generally because, you know, I think, you know, there's always somebody missing that should be there, and there's a few companies or a few people that shouldn't be there than they are, and it's like, oh, that's a bit annoying. But these guys, was it Talent Hero? Yeah, Talent Hero did a really good job because they've actually like profiled every product and they've categorized it and they've given everyone like a cameo portrait. And ultimately, I think that's really valuable. They haven't just listed a bunch of links. They've commentated on different bits of software. And I just thought, you know what? You know, it's hardly innovative, but you can see the work that's gone into it. And if you're buying software now and you're looking for, you know what, a couple of competitors for this category, you don't want to just go with the first thing you see, check out that list. I think it's just well worthwhile getting involved with. I've just shared it in the chat stream there, so do check it out. It's also in the newsletter. Okay, what other useful thing was in, or was it entirely useless last week, Christine?
So there was a lot of really long stuff.
Sorry. Okay.
And I get to like page two and I kind of like go, yeah, I'll come back and read it later.
Mine goes fried.
Never quite do. But we're recruiting at the minute here. So I really liked the tweet, like the 10 things to do when, you can see I really love a list, right?
Yeah.
Like the 10 things to do when you're transitioning jobs as well.
Yeah,
and I
was kind of looking
at that going, actually, there's a couple of things there we could probably build into our onboarding system as well that is quite interesting. And I think, have you got something coming up on that as well?
Onboarding? No, we've got, I think next week might be first 100 days or something where we're trying to sort of nail what the first, you know, within the first 100 days if you're a recruiter, what kind of things need you have achieved in that time, because it's that period is really going to be decisive for you. But yeah, I do like this one, not only for the recommendations, but the presentation was fantastic, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Don't you love the sketch note? So it's basically, folks, I've just shared it in the stream, check it out. It's just a single one page, some artist has drawn it. And it just makes it so easy to consume. You're not like scrolling through loads of text. You're literally at a glance. You can see the 10 things in the same shot. And then you can realize, you know what, that's actually a really good way of presenting information. Sketchnote artists, they are, if they're not getting paid a lot per hour or per sketch, they should be, because this is a premium skill set, I think.
Absolutely.
Give us one more, Christina.
So was the rejecting candidates like from internal hires, was that this week or was that last week?
I think it was this week. This was like one of the hidden aspects of promoting internal mobility is what happens when you reject the internally mobile candidate. And it turns out, actually, you might end up triggering this person leaving the organization entirely because you've mishandled the rejection process. And I think a lot of people don't think about this. We're charging ahead saying, yes, we're going to make open market in our companies. Everyone can apply for any job. We want people to move around, all that well and good. Have we thought what happens when we reject the candidate? Because that person has kind of gone out on a limb. You know, they've sort of revealed themselves a little bit to say, all right, maybe I'm not super happy where I am. I prefer to be here. And then it's not happened for whatever reason. And then they have to go back to where they were and have potentially awkward conversation with boss, or, you know, dialogue with team might be a bit strange. Like, have you thought about how you handle that? And what you don't want to do is actually reject this individual who may be great for another job elsewhere or great to come back and just sit in that role for a couple more months before something else, rather than them, you know, feeling so negative as a result of the rejection, they end up leaving the company entirely. So I think that's probably worth another Breakthrough Live, to be honest. How do you handle candidate rejection for internal candidates? I don't see anybody talking about that. It's very like nuanced and niche, but it's got to be a coming problem for a lot of businesses, as, you know, we want to try and create a more fluid workforce.
Absolutely. And I think there's another thing here as well with those candidates, actually, you know, that they're sitting in that chair talking to the people around them about what that experience was, what impact does that then have on engagement with their peers? There's actually quite a lot to it. So that was one that stuck with me.
You know what? I wonder whether it's because if you know someone well because they're an internal candidate, you might forget to treat them as a candidate, and you just might think, oh, it's just Christina, she'd be all right. You know what I mean? You almost become too complacent about thinking about the psychology that's gone through this person's mind as they've decided to potentially throw the hat in for something. And different people might react differently to that. And, you know, we're not, I think, sufficiently aware of it. But anyway, I think it's a really interesting phenomena and something we definitely need to keep an eye on. Okay, cool. Check out the newsletter. It's full of great stuff. Every week it'll come out. Oh, by the way, one more thing. I reckon I sent an announcement newsletter on Thursday, folks. I don't know whether anybody received this. It went into my spam folder. So I'm subscribed to my own newsletter. And I sent it, and it actually went into my own spam folder. So I reckon it's going into everyone's spam folder. What I need you to do, by the way, is look for it, because the announcement I've made is basically the announcement of the Brain Food Jobs job board. It is live and open, so go and check it out if you're hiring. You too as well, Christina. You can post kind of recruitment vendor type jobs in there also. Get on it and do it. It's currently got a free tier. I'm probably going to take the free tier down because we've already got like 300 plus jobs on it. But use it for the time being, because that tier is going to go. Anyway, more importantly, if you do find the newsletter in spam, please check your spam filter and take it out of spam, because otherwise on Sunday, I think you'll disappear. Super, super annoying. But I think occasionally Google just decide, let's say anything over, you know, 10,000 sendouts goes into this folder. Moving on, let's talk about this topic before we bring on our guest here, Christina. Candidate experience. Do you think that it has, in what ways do you think it's really shifted from, you know, before pandemic to post pandemic? We're now starting to think about getting back to the office. The economy seems to be shooting back up again. We're hiring people once more. There's a shortage of candidates, so suddenly we have to compete. What do employers need to do when they're thinking about, you know, producing a better candidate experience? Any thoughts on that from either yourself or from the customers you've dealt with?
Yeah, do you know, I think we've got to look at both ends of the journey. So I think it's all about employer branding right now. It's all about values. It's all about that engagement piece, because actually the candidates now, they want to know they're going into a business where, you know, they've got the flexibility that they want. And I think that flexibility is very individual. It's no secret that we're in a candidate short market. So actually the candidates, I think they feel a bit braver about asking for more.
Right.
See, that needs to be managed. But we're also in this situation where, even though you go through all the process and you treat them really well and you nurture them, you get to that offer stage and we're still in a situation where anything can happen.
Yep. So we've got to be diligent as well all the way through the process. And aren't sort of dropouts increasing? I don't know whether anybody's recruiting now or have got any kind of anecdotal evidence of their own activities. Have dropouts increased? Like, is it be difficult to close candidates, for instance? I've had a lot of people report that to me, but I suspect that's true as well. It on the one hand, increased confidence from candidates, but also maybe some residual insecurity feelings as well, to think, you know what, give it another 3-6 months or whatnot. Fascinating times and challenging ones as well. Okay, let's bring on our guests. It's going to be a reshuffle of the lineup, by the way. Unfortunately, Carolina can't join us today. She's been called away. So what's going to happen is I'm going to bring on Jana and James at the same time, and then bring on Steve. And I believe Adam Gordon is kind of floating around there somewhere, feeling really sad he's not on screen yet. And we're going to bring him on with Steve later on. So let's bring on Jana and James. Let's see whether we can do that okay. James, I know it's super early for you, but I can see you in the chat stream, so I assume you're going to be okay. Okay, let's bring on Jana. And let's bring on James. Cool.
It's like the concentration on your face right now, huh?
This is, you can tell basically this is live and I don't have any help, because in a more professional show, I wouldn't be typing things on.
I think you're doing really well, because right now you're not like that with your tongue like in a corner as well and all that kind of stuff. So, yay!
There he is, James. James Ellis.
How you doing?
Good Lord. Good to see you, James. How are you doing, sir?
It's not that early. It's 8:15. Come on. This is my second cup of coffee. We got plenty of time.
I feel that's early. James, for the people who don't know you, can you quickly introduce yourself, who you are, what it is you do?
I'm usually not at a loss for words, and maybe the second cup of coffee hasn't kicked in yet. So I, employer brand nerd, I wrote Talent Chooses You, which is now live and free and open source on a Google Doc. If you go to employerbrandbook.com, it's free. Copy it, steal it, use it however you want. It was written purely in the spirit of helping everybody think a little better about employer branding. I, having followed the Hung Lee method, which sounds like a pamphlet in itself, right? The Hung Lee method. I also have a newsletter, and we just hit 100 episodes, 100 issues, called the Employer Brand Headlines. And every Monday, once you've read Hung's email, the next day you get my email, and I talk just about employer branding. So that is available to anybody who wants to sign up. That's what I do.
Why don't you share the link to that, to the newsletter in the chat stream now, James?
Absolutely.
Because I think it is fantastic. Everyone who knows you knows that you're an expert at the EB business, and you know, if that's your thing, and something you want to get better at, then absolutely avail yourself to this information. Okay, Jana, I've invited you. I'm not sure whether it's whether you're getting this prompt. Let me know whether you can sort of see a prompt on screen. It'll basically say, accept this, go and accept it, and you should come on screen. And let me know how you're getting on. But we'll crack
take
over
your time.
Anyway.
Take your time. That's fine. Just me is fine. No.
Do you know what? The reason why you're here, James, is in case of this type of emergency. We need a filler, mate.
That's true. That's true.
Do you know what I mean? So let's drop James in. He can do that.
I am a failed game show host. Let's be fair. That is completely true. So I can vamp with the best of them.
Okay, don't worry, Jana, it's on your screen. Basically, if you're kind of watching it now, there should be something which will prompt you to accept it. And I'll re-prompt and you'll get it. By the way, you should be using Chrome. If you're not using Chrome, use Chrome, because otherwise it ain't gonna work. Okay, James, let's talk about this. You've got, let's have a look at kind of the comments that Christina mentioned. You know, we've got changing psychology of the candidates from this kind of remarkable period we've gone through. What's your learning from this? Because you've actually got a job. You're working for Roku, right? No, he's actually got a job.
Ixnay on the day job, Come on, kid. I mean, no, I do work for Roku. I don't talk about it because when you talk about your day job, lawyers get involved, and I am all things to trying to avoid lawyers wherever possible. But yeah, I mean, that is true. And let's be fair. We have reached the world of the etch-a-sketch end of talent acquisitions. Like, everybody picked up the board and shook it and was like, okay, let's start from scratch. What's a job? What does a job mean? Why do you do your job? How do you calculate your value, your paycheck? All that stuff has changed, and all of the stuff that, you know, kind of bloomed from it, candidate journey, candidate experience, and employer branding, job postings, all of it has to be rethought because the ground changed. And everybody's kind of grasping around and glancing around trying to figure stuff out. And no one has an answer. There's no question.
Well, okay. What's the axiom that has changed the most in your view? Or has it just increased, like you got to do more of it? Or has there anything that's properly reversed? Like, that was good then. It's actually the worst thing you can do now. Has anything like that sort of come across your mind?
Yeah, you've hit this moment where everybody had a path, right? You go to school, you get a good grade, you go to apply for a job, you send out 100 resumes, 4 people call you, you get one of the jobs, you work it for 2 years, you go look for the next job. Everybody had the same kind of path. And there were maybe 10, 20% of people who went, I'm going to be an entrepreneur. I'm going to think about these things differently. And they were the weirdos. They were the great strange people who, let's be fair, reinvigorated and changed and revolutionized what we do. But for the most part, 80, 90% of people followed that path. Well, guess what? That path doesn't exist now. And what those 80 and 90% of people are doing are looking to people like y'all and saying, okay, if I have to treat my career like my own business, like I have to be an entrepreneur of my own career, holy crap, what do I do? What, how do I wait? And you're watching all these candidates kind of realizing there is a wealth of resources, ideas, concepts, ways of approaching it. My favorite kind of watching the boat shift is resumes. And I am the weirdo who loves resumes. I adore editing my friends' resumes. I love it. They don't understand it. It's fine. But I love it because everybody has been taught, everybody read the same four books. Everybody read How to Write Your Resume. Everybody does it exactly the same way. And that's fine if, again, you're following this path that, by the way, no longer exists. And so what you have to say is your resume is actually a marketing document. And the moment you kind of connect those two dots to say your resume is your marketing of yourself, the whole game changes. Suddenly, it's not just about how do I list my CV? How do I do these things the way I'm supposed to be doing? It's about how do I treat it like a commercial, a one-page or two-page commercial? Why talk? Why buy Nikes? Why go to that hotel? Why buy that microphone? Why hire me? Same idea. And once you realize, and let's be fair, marketers have figured this out for a long time, there are no rules. And it doesn't matter if it's sidewalk chalk out in front of the building or a commercial or a video. I've seen somebody did a thing where they made their CV look like an Amazon product. Have you seen this? It's been floating around lately. It's a great marketing document because people talk about it, and that's all that matters. It's just, it's not about how do you list it the right way or the fonts you choose or the listing of things. It is how do you present a compelling case of why talk to me? And with that, I'm going to hold up and be quiet for a bit because someone showed up.
I was going to say, James, I mean, obviously I'm going to, you know, I feel for your esophagus, you know what I'm saying? There's going to be times when I'm going to have to interrupt just to make sure we don't damage that. But great monologue. And I think that one of the main things that we got from this is that candidates now know they can't rely on employers, basically. They have to think, because of the massive economic insecurity that we've had, all candidates are now thinking, you know what? This is a job, but how long is it going to potentially give me? I can't sit here for 5 years. It can't give me that. I've always got to be entrepreneurial in mindset. So the mindset of entrepreneurialism has kind of gone away from those, you know, small niche folks that actually set businesses up to everyone who's thinking in this way. So I think that's the first thing we need to think about. Okay, we've finally got Jana on screen, which is fantastic. So Jana, great to see you. For the people who don't know you, can you quickly introduce yourself, who you are, what it is you do?
Sure. Can you hear me well?
Yeah, we can hear you perfectly well.
Well, it's a great pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invite. My name is Jana. I work as a candidate support advisor right now in Autodesk. But I have been around HR and recruiting since 2014 after the university. I joined to a corporate world and I was managing a recruitment end-to-end cycle, like the pure recruitment when you interview, when you have intake meeting with hiring managers, after like the candidate gets an offer. And after that, I basically moved from my home country, Slovakia, to Spain. And right now I'm living in Spain. I have been working again corporates here in Spain, in Barcelona, as a technical recruiter and also people officer. So basically, last 2 years, the pandemic year, I got exposed to all spectrum of people operations, hiring, pre-boarding, onboarding, recruiting as well. And right now I'm on the candidate side. So that was brief me.
Thank you very much, Jana. And you know what? This kind of experience, I think, is really interesting because especially when you're working for big corporate businesses where, you know, there might have been a certain way in which candidates behaved, you know, when they were applying for jobs or when you're recruiting for them. And now I think maybe has that changed? I mean, what have you noticed in your work to date about how candidate behavior has changed in 2021?
You know, it's a really good topic because 2020 really caught us by surprise. I would say it was a really extreme year for everybody. And I think it basically brought us to a new set point of everything. And first of all, when we're speaking about candidate experience, I would say, are we talking about the pre-pandemic kind of experience when the candidate could actually taste the culture when they went to interviews in person, or are we talking about the purely virtual candidate experience that they are having now when there is no exposure to the office, when they don't meet people, when everything is automated and digital?
Okay, I want to just interrupt you a little bit here because that's a second really interesting point because we've lost a lot of that, like, I'm going to use a big term here, osmotic information transfer. that you get through walking through an office building and speaking to people, you know, the reception person, or, you know, going through the foyer or whatever it is, you get a vibe of the place.
Exactly.
Even if you kind of walk past people at desk and you go into an interview room, you can see what's going on a little bit. And all of that information is coming at you and you have that little bit of a vibe. No longer, right? It's like straight into a Zoom. Everyone's a square with a background, and that's all you've got. So that's the second thing I think employers really need to think about. We've lost a little bit of that. We've lost a lot of information we'd previously implicitly communicate to candidates. Okay, osmotic information transfer. It actually does make sense. I'm not just trying to be smart. I actually copied it from someone. But it's like getting the vibe. Getting the vibe. Okay, Jana, I interrupted you. You're about to finish your thought. Do you want to continue?
No, actually, I found myself in a really tricky situation last year when we went sent from office to home. And actually, I thought, how am I going to do it right now? Like, what skills do I need to develop to do a virtual candidate experience?
Were you doing candidate support before you shifted to remote?
No. I mean, I did people operations. Exactly. In the moment when the pandemic hit.
Right. And then you shifted to a candidate support role.
Exactly.
Can you explain why that happened? Was there a reason that the role specialized in some way, or what was the idea behind this change of focus?
Oh, I changed jobs, basically.
Oh, sorry. So this is from a different company,
no,
right?
No. Yeah. Don't worry. Like, I was doing the same. The form just changed.
Right. I get it. Okay. So I think we've got two major points. Candidate mindset has changed. Information transfer has changed. What does this mean for employers? Like, if I'm cognizant of this, I'm sitting there, I'm a pretty smart employer, a branding person, you know, I'm a pretty smart recruiter. And I think, oh yeah, we've had these two big changes from how things happened before. What am I implementing to make sure that I'm differentiating from other companies that are competing at the moment for all of these candidates? Any thoughts on this?
Yeah, actually here in life, in this recruiting Brainfood Life, I heard a really smart sentence by someone who said, we don't know what we don't know. And how are we going to make sure that we really construct the successful operations and framework for the candidates in our companies, right? So what you're asking is, how am I going to do it? Where is the secret recipe, the secret ingredients that I need to find out in order to deliver that service? I would say that pandemic taught me to be really extremely attention to detail. The candidate will know when I really take care of them and I really walk the automated selection process and I know every detail and I have been in their shoes. They will know. When they face a process that is maybe shaky, there are some bugs, they will also know, okay, it's in the process. Maybe they haven't figured it out. Maybe I can help them. I can give them feedback. But I really think that this really differentiates you from the competitors. If you can deliver the process where every detail has been thought through, when it has been experimented, iterated, tried, and run in different version. That would be my contribution to that.
I think that's a really, you mentioned two really important points there. Firstly, the idea that you need to be very diligent in every step of the process. That you can't rely on the great office anymore, right? You can't say, let's do the interview and then, you know, we'll just wow that person with the swimming pool or whatever it is you have in your office. You don't have this. So all of the moments, all of the micro events, who is it that says micro events? William Timcup says this, doesn't he? He talks about micro events in, follow William Timcup, by the way. He kind of sort of knows what he's talking about on this. So these micro moments, which is an email update or, you know, a quick check-in, those minimal moments that maybe oftentimes dismissed as important, these become elevated in significance. And the second point you mentioned was essentially candidates might be like more forgiving, if you like, of error. Did I get that right, Jana? It was like, okay, if there is a mistake or, you know, something is not working perfectly, just explain it and let them know. And maybe that's going to be a better way to do it. It's a different kind of way to deliver a customer experience.
Exactly, I agree. But I have to say we need to specify it, because like offer a process that is under construction and sell it as a complete process, that this is our recruitment process, it's not okay. Like, we really need to be honest and transparent. We can inform the candidate in advance, like, hey, we have just set up this new system, this internal tool, and we just want to give you a heads up. There might be bugs. Please give us feedback and help us construct the best candidate experience. You can actually pull them to your side by offering them to help you when you construct it. And you wouldn't do it if you were not transparent and honest enough.
Yeah, I mean, I guess how would you best describe this, James? It's kind of like just being honest with your mistakes, isn't it? And being very open with where you're at with things. Like if you've implemented a new system, which all of us are doing because we've got this, you know, remote shifting and all this, that all of us are doing it for the first time often, then say that. You know, don't put yourself under such pressure of perfection when maybe that's not actually the expectation from the candidate side. Okay, cool. James, going back to you on this, let's think about some things that have been implemented. Again, you know, we've got smart people working in TA and EB. They recognize the changed circumstances. What cool things have you seen that companies have done to differentiate themselves in this competitive market space?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think everything you said so far is right. You've got changing informational structures. You've got how people are absorbing information. Personally, I'm thrilled that the office tour of trying to glean the tiniest piece of information about what the corporate wants you to think about their building process has to do with the brand or the culture, because it has nothing to do with nothing. What happens instead is microcultures. You're really saying, okay, the legal team is away and the sales team is away and the sales team in Oslo is of a different way than the sales team in LA, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so what you're saying is you're really not joining a company. If you're joining IBM and hundreds and tens and hundreds of thousands of people, or Amazon, which is hundreds of thousands of people, you're not joining Amazon or IBM. You're joining that team, and that team is far more important than the company. In the same way that we all know that, you know, the adage that says companies hire people but managers are the reasons why they leave, it's microcultures. It's the individual location. So the better you can say, look, you're not just joining company X with its massive structures and price tags and stock prices and, hey, we have offices in every corner of the globe. What you're joining is the FP&A team in Santa Monica. Oh, who is that? Let me talk to my boss. Let me meet the people in that space. Because the truth is, you'll engage and encounter people across the rest of the company, but your team is your team. And because we are so disparate, and since we're so remote, that connection is 10 times more important than it was when we were sitting back in an office and we could say, yeah, okay, you have this kind of vibe around the team. The microculture is everything. And so from an employer brand standpoint, understanding how to project that microculture and talk about that microculture, how to talk about how it's different and how it also ladders up to the large organization, that's what's critical. And I think that's where you're starting to see these very interesting pockets of people trying to do that.
Let me criticize this view, James, because if we're all working remote, then surely the team matters less. Like, okay, listen, I don't need to sit next to this guy. I don't need to like him. I just need to do my job. He needs to do his job. Why do I care about team culture?
Okay, liking someone and culture about something are two different things. First off, and I apologize because I've done the thing that I hate about other people myself is that I've talked about culture without defining culture. And the words like culture and strategy and brand are those words that we throw around like everybody knows they are. But if you ask 100 people what culture is, you're going to get 112 different answers. Culture is how decisions get made when there's no either authority or rule about how to apply that rule. It's just how you get things done. It is the way things get done. It's the things you choose to ignore, the cultural norms of how you get things done. It's not about liking someone, right? I know plenty of people who are incredibly successful in their jobs who are surrounded by people who are like, the second I quit that job, I'm never speaking to them again. They're very good at their job. They're very good coworkers. They're great to, you know, they do their job. They're there for that. And I think that's one of the things that work and COVID has really said is like, look, some people get to choose work is work and life is life. And they are different things. I have friends and I have work friends, and I can choose to intermingle them. Back before, you spent so much time at the office. Guess what? Your work people had to be your friends, because otherwise you didn't have much time for any other friends. So you had to stay. So culture is not friendship. So microculture about how do we get things done? How do we achieve? How do we build things? That is crucial. And more than just knowing it, communicating it to somebody who a candidate who is a complete stranger is so hard to do, but it's so crucial.
Okay, I think this is a really good kind of idea. Maybe the fifth big idea we've talked about, just spooling back before my, you know, interjection, which is the idea of having micro cultures. In other words, team-based cultures. That's the unit of analysis we should be caring about. Yes, you need to care about, obviously, the corporate brand, etc. But you have to recognize that individual teams is how the person is going to experience the company more than anything else. And that's something that needs to be cultivated. Now, that's actually a big challenge for EB, isn't it? Because suddenly it's down to the individual managers and down to the individual teammates rather than here's the corporate template. How do you see the relationship between like employer branding folks and TA folks even, and these hiring managers and teams? Like how do we get them to communicate how they operate to candidates? Is that something they should do or something we should write down and then communicate for them? What are your thoughts?
I mean, and I think we could have a quick show of hands. How many people have heard in the last 5 years that recruiting is everybody's business, right? The business, from the CEO to customer service, everybody is actually in the recruiting business. They are developing. They're the reasons why people show up. The step along that path is now that employer brand is everybody's business. And that's true. The trick is that information has not trickled down either as an idea or the actual, this is how you do it. This is how I dread the day I have to kind of build a one pager and hand it to every hire manager and say, read these things. Cause that's not real. That's bullshit. That's the party line. And that's no fun. What you have to do is say, here are a couple ideas of how we think we're different. What I'd like you to do is sit in them and think, how does that apply to this team? How is that, which of these, how, in what way are these ideas true in this microculture? And again, that's where microculture really has its value, is that it's not about think of Disney. And I love Disney because Disney is the best example I can think of where you have multi-brands and the challenges of how do you have the Disney culture, which is both Disney plus streaming Mandalorian plus Moana plus ESPN. Now, Disney will tell you that they like to think of it as all of their brands have a little bit of fairy pixie dust and ESPN gets the least amount because it's all football. But they do all still ladder up to this brand. Well, if they can kind of solve some of these challenges to say they're all Disney brands, why can't a 1,000-person company with 40 different teams and microcultures, why can't they say, look, in this team, the parts of that brand that are most true, not just true, but most true, are these, and this is how they manifest, and this is how you see them, and this is how you provide those proof points. That also means for your brand, it's not 100% true across the board everywhere. It can be, you can say, look, that's a pillar. That's more on the, you know, on that other team side. They worry about that part more. In the same way that sales and legal are so radically different in terms of their culture and approach, they can take different approaches to the pillars of your brand. They can say these three pillars are important to us and these two pillars are important to them. And that's still the brand.
All right. So that's a really good way of thinking about it. There may be some like axioms, let's say, that are part of your corporate culture. Hopefully they're not cliches, but you know, they're things that you care about as how you do things. But then you can go to individual teams and say, how does it manifest? How do these things manifest in your particular team? And it will manifest in different ways based on who's already there as a component of that. So I think that's a really interesting way to think about it. Maybe this is a framework that could be, it seems to me like a one pager that you could probably give people that will help help educate or give them a tool that will help the hiring manager and the team get comfortable with this.
Something we've done internally is said, okay, these are the 12 kind of traits that we all kind of see. We see a lot of. These are true inside our day-to-day lives. And we ask the team, rank them. So we can say in this team, these three traits are the most important. Not that these other traits aren't, but these are the ones that are most. But if you go to another team, these other three traits are a little more important to them. It helps create a sense of cohesion of a brand, but also this is how this microculture lives inside this larger world.
Do we like this, folks? I'd be interested in your thoughts on this. Let me know where this way of having like a dialogue with your teams about the culture, about what is the priority of these key axioms. Is that a useful thing? I'd love to hear your thoughts. I personally think it is, because it gives the people the teams a sense of ownership. Because once you can rearrange the priorities, then it's kind of your priorities. Rather than someone rolling out a top down, by the way, folks, here's our culture. You know, it's like, oh, right. This is it. And then suddenly it's like marketing. So it doesn't quite work out. Okay, that's really interesting. So having there is a problem with this. And I want us all to think about this, even if we haven't kind of experimented with it in real life. I certainly have, but I want us to think about it, okay? What if you have certain teams that, for instance, contravene the company axioms somewhat? So I'm thinking, let's say, one of the problems you have, for instance, when you have a very tightly knit team that's been around for a long time, they end up being quite exclusive. It's quite hard to break into a new circle of friends that all know each other. We've all had that experience, right? So sometimes you have that scenario. How do we work with those folks? They haven't done anything wrong. They've just stuck together for a long time. So what are your thoughts on that? Any ideas? Christina, feel free to pop in with a thought on this. You're on mute, by the way. Yep.
Yeah. Do you know, I was just thinking, because we've, like, my team here at sort of HQ, we are really tight. We've worked together for a number of years. We are exactly what you've just described. And okay, you can argue we are the top down, if you like. We're setting that agenda in terms of culture. But one of the things that we started doing was this like weekly live show. And
I've seen it, yep.
Right. It's absolute nonsense. It's literally, if you dropped into the office, that's what you would walk into. Random conversations, me saying the wrong things, them telling me off for it. But what it's done right now, like I said, we're recruiting at the minute, and every candidate that I've seen, they've watched that live show.
Right. Okay, let me just quickly summarize, and I hate to just jump in sort of at this, but one of the ways to mitigate this scenario where you've got a strong existing team that's done nothing wrong, they're simply being very loyal and very happy working together, is you just got to make it transparent. Just let people to see how they operate. Live stream a day, do something that makes it very clear what they do. They're not hiding anything. They're just a bunch of people that have just worked really well together. That, I think, is totally the way to do it. Okay, we're kind of running short on time. This conversation has been amazing. So I want to let Jana and James say one more thing each on this. What would you say? Yeah, James, man, I'm going to have to time you as well, dude. Let's have a look at sort of the one thing that you would advise a person like, trying to build a really better candidate experience in this new post-pandemic era. What have you learned, Jana, for instance, that you could say, you know what, this is going to help you do it better? Any thoughts on this?
Yes, actually, I summarized some of the key pillars I have for this virtual recruiting, spectrum that we are managing. I would say, first of all, define the backbone of your recruitment. What is the top quality that you're looking for? Because I have been in the selection process myself when I was jumping through rounds and rounds. And in the last round with the CEO, I learned that they really need speed as one of the top qualities that I have not been measured. I have not been actually exposed to any task that would measure my speed. So really sit down, reflect, and define what is the backbone of your recruitment. Why do you need that in your team? And also, I'm also a culture and a value person. And I would say the way how you expose the company, like if culture and value was a play in the theater, candidate experience would be sitting in the front row. So your culture gets exposed if you want it or if you don't want it. Either way, it gets exposed. So really, if you have a good employee handbook in place or a code of conduct and really bulletproof of the values with behaviors that expose or have these values inside, that would be a great thing, even for candidates to share them with. Right?
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like a commitment also, isn't it? When you say, okay, here are the values and here are the exhibited behaviors that we're seeing
exactly
from people exemplified as
exactly
publish that.
It's a fair play because you are actually exposing them like what you like and what you maybe don't like. And I'm always for a fair play with candidates, like respectful way, like this is what we are, this is what we do, this is how we behave. You like it, take it. You don't, it's okay.
You know what? I love that. And also I would go further because I'm often defensive of, cultures that people typically lambaste because, you know, they're a terrible company and that CEO is horrible. And I think, you know what? That's fair enough, but he's not hiding that. Jeremy, he's literally saying this is how it is. So don't work there. He or she is usually he, by the way, that's like cracking the whip and saying he's 80 hour day, week, whatever. Fine, you know it. Don't complain about it. The complaining that this is hidden from you. It's literally how this person appears, and he's like all over the shop, sort of in terms of publicity. So I've got sympathy with that kind of approach because at least it's straight and it's honest. Okay, quickly go to you, James. Give us one tip, one thing that you would say that a young person that's not a young person, but someone who's like maybe struggling a little bit with EB and candidate experience. What would you recommend that they focus on?
It's very simple. You can't buy it. You can't buy a tool that does it. If you can buy it, someone else already did and they're already using it, so you're already behind. The answer to all your employer brand questions is a simple question. How does this create desire amongst the right talent I'm looking for? You are not Amazon. You're not trying to hire 4 trillion people by the next week. You are trying to hire a dozen, 100, maybe even 1,000 people this month. Congratulations. That means you only have to make about 10,000 people fall in love with you to want to have a Taylor Swiftian level desire for you. If you can do that, so many of your other problems just kind of go away. And really, if the only way to do that is to not say, here, spend money, or to slap a coat of paint on something, is to understand what is true about you, what you offer someone, what that culture is, why you should be here, what the value exchange is, and spell it out so clearly they can't be ignored. If you do those simple things, and I admit they're simple to say and not simple to do, but if you can do those simple things, you are so far ahead of the game, don't sweat. You're good.
You know what? I hope people are making notes on this. I'll certainly be replaying that because I think it makes a hugely important point. A large part of poor candidate experience is that we're stuffing too many people in at the top of the funnel, and then we have to explain to them or figure out some way to say, you were never right for this. Make sure you're actually looking for who you're getting. You're only attracting those that are going to be compatible for it. You basically don't want to stuff the top with too many folks and interact with too many people.
We've been tricked to hire and get 100 or 200 people applicants. You need 2 people, one you hire and one you say thanks, but no thanks. And everything beyond those 2 people is wasted effort. And if we don't embrace that, we're just going to spin our wheels.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We're all kind of inherently looking at volume, and it's unnecessary. We've got to change mindset. Okay, we've got to move on because we've got to bring on Steve and Adam as well. So I just want to say thanks to Jana and James. It's been great having you both on the show. Thank you so much. If you've enjoyed this, I'd love to get you back and talk about this some more. This is a big topic. We should do another one of these. Jana, great to see you. We'll see you soon. Okay.
Take care. Thank you. Bye.
James, great to see you. We'll catch up soon, buddy.
Absolutely. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for having me.
Weren't they great? They're great, passionate people about this topic. I really do dig everything that they've said. So much so, in fact, that we're kind of running way behind on time. So let me just quickly bring Steve on. I did say to Steve when he said, yeah, I'll do this. I'll make sure you have more time. And I failed to do that. So, Steve, I really do apologize. But let's bring him on. And we'll bring on Adam as well because he's got nothing to do. literally blocks out like 2 hours every Friday. Just you're waiting for the prospect of coming on to bring through. There he is, Steve Usher. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm very well. How are you?
Great to see you, sir. And there's Adam Gordon. Adam, how are you doing, sir?
Very good, thank you.
You look like you're in the Arctic, Adam. Are you okay? It's like it's summer. What's going on?
I think that's because of the beard. That's the only reason. I've got a hoodie on. I'm not.
You've got a hoodie on. It looks like you're really cold. Okay, so Steve, for the folks who don't know you, can you quickly introduce yourself, who you are, what it is you do?
I'll do it really quick. So Steve Usher from the UK. I've been living in Stockholm for 5 years. Half a decade has gone ridiculously quick. I am an experienced designer, design thinker. I have a studio called Five Studio, and we exclusively focus on redesigning employee experience with particular focus on hiring and onboarding.
Fantastic stuff. And Adam, everyone knows you, but quickly intro who you are, mate.
Yeah, I'm Adam Gordon. I'm co-founder and CEO at Candidate ID. I've been in recruitment for 22 years, and I love experience design. Steve's the guy.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And who have we got there? We've got an additional member to the squad. Hello.
This is she's 4 years old, and her name's Baby Oren.
How are you doing?
She just said she's not a baby. I'm just to let you know that.
Well, that's you tell. So that's you tell.
She's a big girl.
Okay, let's get on with this general idea, this sort of where we're at with candidate experience post-pandemic. Steve, you consult companies about this. What have you been getting from employers? Why, like when they've come in to ask you for help or, you know, to sort something out, what has been the main thing that's been that they've been concerned about?
So I think the main thing that I've seen is just what had happened last year, which has been utter carnage in the talent acquisition space from a candidate experience point of view. I think what we've found is there's a lot of kind of recruitment processes, and we call them processes. It tends to be linear left to right, as we see recruitment has really been called out with a plethora of candidates that we've never seen before. So a lot of the challenges is faced around how do we protect our brand by delivering, you know, better experiences. That's been one of the main ones that I've seen for sure. So it's also one of the challenges for me has been, I think we've also got to change this narrative around this obsession around candidate experience. I think that we've got to also start to turn our attention to, you know, it's a hiring journey. Okay. So, and that journey has, it can be complex. It's got multiple kind of touch points and moments along that journey. But there are a number of people who share that and have different experiences. And I think we've also become a little bit too obsessed on the candidate must have this experience. It's all about the candidate. And as we know, recruitment also has recruiters about what's their recruiter experience. We also have hiring managers, what's their experience. And if they're not all aligned as well, then you know that process and what some of the outcomes are really just not going to happen. And I would just to add to that, one of the biggest things, and we ran some experiments earlier this year and back into last year, and all roads from an experience point of view led to the hiring manager. I mean, it really genuinely does. It's one of the low hanging fruits. And whether that's talent acquisitions not strategically aligned or more kind of reactive and not close to the hiring managers, or at recruiter level, desk level, recruiters aren't confident enough or have the skills and capabilities to actually manage that. So that's some of the things that I've been seeing that's causal to that experience for sure.
You said something really important there, Steve, which is this idea that there's other people involved in this hiring journey. And if Absolutely. We're obsessively focused on candidates alone, we're actually missing lots of other dimensions that cause that candidate to have a bad experience. Now that you said it, it's so obvious, isn't it? If your hiring manager is having a terrible experience recruiting for this role, guess what? That's going to cascade to the candidate because
they don't understand their impact on that journey or those people. I mean, these are hygiene factor stuff in my mind. I think that's where I'm seeing now. I was really intrigued in this session today, is I think we've got to move out of this. We've created this narrative for ourselves where we're so obsessed with candidate experience without really understanding, hang on a minute, let's just remove candidate for a minute. What's an experience? What actually differentiates from everything else an experience? And just to share with everyone out there, the biggest difference is the services and things like HR tech, whatever technology you're buying in, all of these things that make it quicker, easier, faster for people to engage with your business is a service. It's not an experience. And I know a lot of tech vendors are saying it will improve your candidate experience. In the true realms of the true experience designers in like theme parks and it's not, trust me. And so for me, it's about service design. How do you make it quicker, easier, faster, time well saved? Can experiences specifically is about time well spent. And where do you need to show up as a business in the key moments and design that as an experience that really resonates with that audience? Or if it's an engineer, how do you create this kind of immersive moment in your hiring journey, which really catapults you amongst the rest? Because there's a sea of ordinary right now being delivered from a hiring process point of view. So I definitely encourage people to really, really stretch themselves outside of TA and start to explore, you know, where there's learnings, and there's lots I can share that will really then recontextualize into the TA space, because the answers aren't in TA, trust me, because if they were, we would have created it a long time ago.
Steve, I need you to share some resources into the chat stream right now. Sure. So the stuff that you would say, as you say, outside of TA, that we can go and dig into and spend a bit of time with, because I think you've said some really important things there. I was going to go on about the hiring manager experience, but you went on, and I think you added significantly more from that. Adam, do you want to just chime in on what Steve said? I mean, any thoughts on, you know, the idea that maybe our aperture is too small, we're looking purely on candidates, you know?
Yeah, I'm going to a slightly different lens on it, but we are absolutely looking at the wrong thing and trying to, we are totally focused on the application process. And I think most people I know in talent acquisition think that candidate experience is about the application process, and it's about making it as easy as possible for candidates to apply. You're crazy. You're utterly, utterly berserk. Thinking it's a good idea to get people to go, oh, one click and I've applied, and that's good candidate experience. That is terrible candidate experience. You have to.
Well, hang on. That's a big assertion. I mean, I've filled in forms that take, you know, 7 minutes to go through a process. We know that's a bad experience.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's not, but the opposite is not good because it takes 1 millisecond to apply.
Right.
You take 1 millisecond to apply, and you wonder why you get so many drop-offs. You see so many people not turning up for your assessment centers, not turning up for your interviews, not doing the things that are asked of them, because they've done nothing to generate any kind of commitment towards the process. That's why. That's the first thing is we're absolutely addicted to this application phase as being the only bit of candidate experience, when it starts way before that. It starts before the employer branding stage. It starts when the person first comes into any kind of contact with your organization, or any kind of awareness with your organization. The other thing is, and Steve's absolutely right, the design of the experience right the way through the relationship is really vital, not just at the point where they're applying for the job. And what James said earlier is completely correct as well. I don't even know if you need two applicants, you need one applicant. Let's stop obsessing about applicants. If we've got the biggest possible pipeline to go and identify people from, then the number of applicants is irrelevant. And we are, by focusing on getting as many applicants as possible, we're also letting down so many people. And if the only relationship they have with our company as a potential employee is that they apply and get rejected, we've got no hope of any sort of decent talent pipeline. So this whole concept of candidate experience needs to be from the minute that they have got any kind of acknowledgement with your organization through to the minute they retire and they don't care anymore.
So how do recruiters do that, though? Because our kind of focus is a lot narrower than that, in the sense that, yes, you know, we'd love to interact. I should be on a beach, but I'm not. I mean, there's a world as we are, right? And the world as we are is that recruiters have a fairly narrow position, in the sense that we have to fill roles. So we might not have the time to interact with candidates that may never be in a participant in a recruitment process. So is there a situation where we have another person dealing with that, and there's some sort of handover, is there tooling that can help? I wonder,
No, 100%. We can have separate teams that are responsible for that. Microsoft has a team that's responsible for that. They've got a team that's responsible for focusing on four companies only, and building relationships with people that work for those four organizations. So we definitely need to be doing that. Adavinta has a talent demand generation team that team's purpose, only purpose, is to build relationships and build experiences for people long before they're interested in talking to them about jobs.
Who's this? So, who's this person?
It's a company called Adavinta.
Adavinta.
Yeah.
I'd love to know. Yeah. So
e-commerce business. They just took over eBay Classifieds. Big company.
All right. So what we're talking about here is very much almost a, and I don't want to sort of say this is a bad thing, because I don't think sales is bad, but it's almost like a very advanced way of thinking about sales, where you need to create brand recognition. You need to create very good first impression. I think what you said was absolutely right, Adam. If you're attracting a lot of candidates, necessarily you're going to reject a lot of them. And no matter how well you do that, it's still a no. And no one loves a no. It's always going to be a difficult thing to accept, particularly if you're passionate about that opportunity.
Unless it's a no that comes with an ongoing relationship and an ongoing experience. And it always never does. And that's the problem.
Right. You know what I like? Yeah, our friend Stan Vasovich, he actually, I don't think he's involved in this anymore. He's more of a partnership person these days. But he had a really good concept of always like providing that additional thing for the candidate or the person to do once you've had to lay on some bad news. It's like, okay, listen, Adam, we're not going to hire you for this role for reason X. However, we'd love to keep in touch. Here are a couple of things maybe you want to explore. Let's have a conversation over here. And then, you know, you kind of make sure it's not a brick wall experience that people get the big guillotine coming down saying, you're rejected, go away. that's got to hurt, what it is.
It's an infinite game. The relationship should never stop. And with every click that they make, there should be another click that they make after that, which is something that's going to continue to build that relationship or deepen that experience in some way or generate goodwill.
Is there a way in which we can justify this? Because it's going to take effort, right? I can imagine a lot of people listening to this and thinking, you know, well, that's all well and good, but I've only got 3 people in my team. How am I going to be able to spend budget the time to do all of this stuff when I'm getting crushed by requirements? What is the way in which we could help that person build a business case to doing this better? Any thoughts, anybody?
Yeah, so I this is pretty symptomatic in most organizations. I think the organizations that are definitely like IBM, for example, ABN AMRO, ING, who have really fully immersed themselves in like design thinking, which is focused and exclusively looks around the understanding the needs, wants, and desires of their employees, whether it's a candidate or a new hire. So I think anybody who's short on resource, for me, is do research, start to empathize and understand different talent groups. And you can do that by creating surveys, right? And start to understand and deep dive into some of those comments and then start to build out because it's much stronger. It's much easier to build a business case, not just for you trying to fight it, to say, it's not me saying it. It's this research from our candidate groups who are actually saying X, Y, Z. And this is where I think we should start to build out, or where we should actually have a roadmap in which to start from. But research and empathy, most of my clients struggle with bottom up. And a lot of it is systemic top down, which is obviously very inherited. That's where it all starts. And there's a lot. And I would say in a recruitment process, there is, if you think about your talent pipeline from just application going all the way down, you cannot underestimate the amount of insight that is sitting in your current recruitment process right now with all of your candidates. If you're just asking, just ask them, put some surveys together and start asking for some general insight that you're looking to glean to help improve either the experience or learn more about their behaviors and what they want and what their needs are.
You know what, Steve, every time you say something to follow up that is even more interesting. And I'm just losing track of the interesting things you've said. So I need to replay all of this and make a note of it. But there's one point that you made I thought was really important. And this was addressing the idea of how do you build a business case. Don't build a business case. Go and speak to the candidate, speak to the market. And you could almost dual purpose that activity. You should speak to the market anyway, but that you can repurpose that information you get back, and you can then bring it to the organization and say, you know what, this is the people you say that we want to recruit from. This is actually what they're telling us we need to do, or what they're looking for. This is how we become a competitive employer to those organizations.
So can I just share a very quick something, because it's so easy for everyone to do this. Literally go to Typeform, create a survey, and I'm happy to share out some of the templates that I've used. And basically, all you do is send an automated response, which you do anyway as part of your ATS, and then just retweet the template and say, hey, listen, we're looking to learn more from you. Post CV, whatever it might be with the words we use. We want to learn more about you so that we can improve. And in there, you ask questions like, based on, you know, what kind of decisions do, or what kind of content do you base decisions on, or what channels do you use, or whatever you want to know, put it in there. I've been getting like 80% response rates with like probably 70% verbatim responses and the gold in there. And if that's your biggest slice of audience, there's so much insight just on that one touch point. And there's so much you can get from it.
On that note, Hugo, I think the timing of the survey dispatch is really important, and you don't do that after the rejection, I think.
I've tested that. Yeah.
Yeah. Will you tell us about the data, Steve? I mean, obviously, you're going to get people pissed off. They've been rejected. They're going to come back and hammer you. I think that's pretty obvious. But we've always done that, haven't we? It's the end of the process is when we've delivered the survey. That's not when to do it. When's the optimal time to start asking questions about their experience of your business?
So I noticed Hugo saying like rejected candidates is complicated. I agree, but it's a necessity. So what you're going to always get is a swing in bias. Okay, so nobody feels great about being rejected, period. So you're from a research point of view, you're always going to get a bias. You'll get a bias if you survey when they've joined you, and you're going to get a survey. You're going to get bias if you survey them when they've been rejected. But what you've got to do is you've got to listen at the various touch points. So definitely post application. I've seen some companies do in between just to check in, hey, we're doing okay from first to second successful. And then there's also triggers using the ATS where you've actually had rejected as well. So I would do, without kind of getting too much survey fatigue, I would kind of always max out maybe 2 to 3 surveys depending on what the outcome is, and then collect it all together. And we've done some pretty detailed stuff where then you sliced and diced it by function or level. We've even been able to attribute the NPS score to even hiring managers and also recruiters. So there's a lot you can kind of do and play with it. But I would always say to you, keep it simple, 3 questions with verbatim at the end. Just ask for feedback. In there's the gold. Whether someone scores you a 5 or a 3, get the verbatim. That's where the gold is. And then just interpret it and start to identify the themes that are coming out in there. And there's obviously lots of tools that have been emerging as part of that now that are doing that from an automated point of view. But it's a good start just to listen. I think that's the behavior we need to think about is, how do I walk in their shoes? Empathy. How do I listen without my own lens on, or without me thinking in my bias? I've got bias as well based on this is what I think they need. And some of that might be validated through the research, but invariably you will definitely learn something new. An engineering talent group will have very different expectations to a sales talent group. So start to understand those groups in more detail for sure.
Okay, Steve, let's move on to talk about big changes in terms of how businesses are operating. We're talking, you know, previously candidate experience was pretty much there was an office experience. 18 months ago, remote working was basically a fringe activity. Company that was remote only, they were like, oh, that's super interesting, let's talk about it. Actually, now it may be a case where a lot of us are experimenting with this. What is the single biggest impact on candidate experience design, what employers need to do with this shift to remote, or maybe even to this hybrid type of thing that you've seen, and what you'd kind of recommend that companies need to keep in mind?
Yeah, so Jana said something earlier, I made a note of it, like taste the culture virtually. And I was like, without a doubt. So this might be a bit way out there for people, but I really, this is what, when I saw your, when you invited me into this, we've got to move into kind of in candidate engagement. So how are we engaging people through experiences? Forget candidate experience hiring, just learn about experiences. These 4 words I hope will sit with everybody. So the experience is the marketing, right? So that is your marketing. How do you leave an impression with somebody so they get a taste of that culture, or they get a little bit more? So I think James was talking about that particular individual team. How do you get a taste of that outside of maybe a video or a content? And I think personally, we're going to go more into immersive storytelling. And I think we're going to start to go more using those words immersive. How do we not just project stuff to candidates and say, this is what it's like to work in this team, but maybe you come into that story and narrative a little bit more and step into that more? Because we're going to need, whether that's through VR, whether that's through some kind of technology as an enabler, We're going to need to start to test these ways in which we can then get people to kind of immerse themselves and step inside of an organization, because they're going to have to do it from home. And they might come into the workplace a couple of days a week. I also have a theory that workspace, obviously, as we know, changing. And I think organizations should be spending a ton of money creating immersive areas where new employees, potential candidates, existing employees can go in and immerse into current strategy of company, put on some goggles, do however that immersive area might be. So I just think that's that for me, the next stage of experience is how do we create it? How do we develop it into a much more immersive piece? So that's my, yeah.
You know what, and that also maybe maps back to a small comment that Adam made earlier about, you know, the candidate's got to come and give something, or you need to provide a doorway for them to do that. Because when a candidate or a person is involved in anything, you have a better experience. This is audience participation. Like, comedians know about this, rock stars know about this. Get the audience into it, and then suddenly everyone is vibing with it. It's the same reason why you go watch sports live, for instance. It's a totally different experience from watching it on a TV. Even if you went to a bar and you watched sport, but you're interacting with other people doing it, that changes your experience. So we need to learn a lot more about how that psychology operates when we're thinking about designing the candidate experience. Jumping in, I know time is short, Steve, but I want to talk a little bit about this halfway house we have. AR, VR is great. I've got an Oculus. I would totally recommend it. However, most people won't and don't. But there seems to be a midway point between Zoom and in-person. And it seems a lot of these, like, you know, game almost interfaces where, you know, characters going to be, I don't know whether you've seen things like Gather and stuff like this. What are your thoughts on that type of product? These platforms where you can sort of get involved. It's not entirely AR, VR. It is still on a screen, but it's not just looking at Zoom. And are they gimmicky, or do you think they've got something to offer?
So I think it's the same thing as social media, right? So it's going to be what do you resonate with the most? You mentioned Periscope earlier at the beginning of the session today. I think we're going to see a fragmentation. Everybody's jumping on the bandwagon. Everyone's developing these tools and all these different things. And I think all that will happen is these interactions will just kind of spread out a little bit more. And it's going to make it way more complex for organizations to engage people on different types of platforms, if that's the way it's going to be done, whether it's currently, if we take social media, whether it's Facebook or Instagram or LinkedIn as an example. So I think that's where it will go. I like Gather, by the way. It's worth mentioning. That's where I see that going. For sure. One thing I would say, just to mention, is experience design, guys, is not expensive. I promise you can do some stuff just by doing some really simple, like, dramatic structure work. You can just literally start to do some very high level journey mapping. You know, we did a workshop here in Stockholm and we had like Visma and Ericsson in the room. And we literally, within an hour and a half, we literally redesigned like an onboarding experience as an experience. So it's not, this isn't Disney-fying things here. It is, there are some really low hanging fruit stuff that you can just shift your lens out of process and technology and shift, just pick up a pair of Elvis glasses that Elton John glasses that represent the experience lens. That's all you need, is another toolkit just to put on and start to go, okay, I see it as an experience now. How can I design it just as much as a process?
You know what? I love that, Steve. Process technology important, but you know what? Are we overly fixated on this? And maybe there's other ways in which you could get a great experience. And I think all of us have intuitively know this. You know, when you've had a great conversation with friends, or when you've had a great night out, or whatever it is, oftentimes these things are not about the the accoutrements of this. It's something else about, you know, the interaction that you have. Okay, Steve, listen, I've got to let you go because time is short. And you've already
burned
plenty of time with us. It's great to have you on again. We'll definitely get you back if you're up for it, Steve. Are you still on holiday in Sweden? Have you guys come back yet or what?
I am anyway. I'm back. Yeah,
you're back. Okay. I don't know. I mean, I write the Swedes off from July onwards. It's like, it's gone till whenever. Okay. You have a good rest of the day, sir. Great to see you, man.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks, Christina. Take care.
What an interesting set of guests we've had. I think this has been amazing. I don't know what your thoughts are on this, Christina.
Yeah, There's so much in that today. It's like five episodes in one. There's so many different things we can pick up on.
I know. It's going to be like, I've been trying to write these things up in Twitter threading, and it's like impossible to get it all in one thing. But it was, there's so much all of the guests have contributed here. What I like about it all, though, is that it seems that there's an enthusiasm and a commitment to really change how people experience the job search and the job discovery process. And all of that has got to be a positive thing because, firstly, we need to be competitive with candidates. But I also feel it's more than just that. It's like we need to just treat people a little bit better, you know?
Yeah, I think the big takeaway for me really is the fact that actually, yeah, we are all caught up thinking candidate, and we just need to look up and take a breather. And, you know, I'm always talking about using strategies from outside of recruitment and how can we apply them within. And it's things like, you know, from a sales perspective, creating those pushaways. There's just so many different things we can pull from today. You know, it's really exciting stuff.
Yeah, I'd recommend everyone rewatch that. I think it was a really great show. And Christina, it's really great having you on it. Next time we need to get you doing the guest stuff because I think you've got a lot more to offer on that side, and we've not been able to see that so much. But anyway, great to see you. I hope you're well. Hopefully we'll catch up at some point. I don't know what you're at, where you're at or whatnot, but I'm out and about, so if you're up for meeting up, then do let me know, you know.
Definitely It's been a pleasure to join you.
Have a good weekend, Christina. That was great, wasn't it? We're running way over time, folks. So I'm going to end this story now. I hope you've enjoyed it. What an amazing learning we've all had. Do let us know. By the way, one of the things I want to try and do is to make sure everyone who's actually watched this show can interact with the other people here. So please share your LinkedIn in the chat stream if you haven't done so already. I saw some people do that before. Heidi did that. I think that's a good way to try and interact with a few people. You can actually go back on replay and find other people on the chat stream and find those links. So share the LinkedIn, your LinkedIn, on the chat stream, and then why don't you connect together? I think there's lots of reasons why we should continue this conversation, even like independently. You don't need necessarily me to be there to do that. So go ahead and do that. Well done, Hugo, Alicia, Colleen, Pat. Fire in your LinkedIn. Let's all connect. I think this is something that's definitely worth doing. Let's think about some of these exercises. Actually, just thinking out loud, I wonder whether it might be worth while putting together like some sort of roundtable or something from the guests, not the guests, but the people in the crowd, and see whether we can implement some of the ideas that we had from our guests because they were so good. So anyway, go ahead. I'm going to give you a moment to keep putting those links in. Other than that, follow the channel if you've enjoyed the show. We're back next week. What are we talking about? I think we are talking about first 100 days. So this is going to be, you know, what you should do as a recruiter if you've got a new job. First 100 days, what is your activities? What do you need to have achieved in that time? And the good thing about this particular show is that we're actually getting in recruiters that have recently moved jobs. And they've all passed probation, so they've gone past the 100 days. They're going to reflect and tell us, okay, this is what's happened. This is something I haven't done, I should have. This is something I did do, and that it worked. So make sure you do that. And I will see you all next week. Have a good weekend, everybody.